Breaking ball lined and over the head of the first baseman. Leaping was Moreland. He can't come down with it. Heading for second is Thames, and now digging for third. Escobar will score to tie it at three. It's an RBI triple for Eric Thames, and the Blue Jays now just a single shy of the cycle here in the sixth inning, and still nobody out.
There's your play of the game, brought to you by Speed Boost from Rogers. Hello, Speed Boost. Goodbye waiting. Another first, only from Rogers. Eric Thames with that RBI triple. And as Alan Ashby said, the Jays were a single shy of the cycle. And next up was Jose Bautista, who singled in Thames. A three-run inning gave the Blue Jays a 4-3 lead. And then in the bottom of the ninth, where was Eric Thames? He was sitting on the bench. And probably for the right reasons. Because Corey Patterson is supposed to be a much better defensive right fielder, or left fielder, center fielder for that matter, than Eric Thames is. But it was Corey Patterson who got completely eaten up by a fly ball that landed on the warning track and wound up driving in the winning run. Michael Young with an RBI single, an extraordinarily catchable fly ball. And the game's over, and the Texas Rangers beat the Blue Jays. 5-4. The Blue Jays back down below the 500 mark at 50-51. And the blown save for John Rausch was the Blue Jays' 17th of the season. They are 5-10 in games in which they blow saves. And I'm checking quickly the box score from the Las Vegas 51s game. They're home to Tucson, and they're getting no hit, trailing 2-1 in the fifth inning. John Van Benschoten's no hitting them. I was just checking to see if Brett Laurie had been taken out of the game. Maybe get him to Texas tomorrow. Say goodbye to Corey Patterson. But no, Laurie's still in there. So, sorry for getting your hopes up. It's probably not going to be until August 2nd until Brett Laurie winds up in the major leagues. That was just terrible. Plain and simple. Last night's game, the 12-2 loss, a lot easier to accept than this one. We're Jays Talking It Up. The phone lines are open at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-666-0590. We start things off with Tom in Ajax. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Mike. Well, that's another long ninth inning.
That wasn't that long.
Well, you know what I mean.
Yeah, another ugly ninth inning.
And I agree with you. I think Corey Patterson is probably writing his own ticket out of town tonight by July 31st with that botched play, because he hasn't really been a useful player probably since sometime in June.
I don't know what happens July 31st. It's not like he would fetch anything. Not like anyone would be interested in dealing for him.
Well, I would say by hook or by crook, then, if you can't get anything for him, if that's the case, then, you know, adios on the waiver wire. I wanted to talk to you, though, about John Farrell's performance as a manager in this game. And I don't know if we get a lot of calls on Jay's talk about his performance, but I really thought it was awful. And that's not just a pile on, because it was just a tough loss.
What would you have done differently?
Well, for one, I would not pitch to Nelson Cruz with two out and a base open. I'm still shaking my head at that. Even when the Jays were winning, I thought, boy, this
in the fifth inning?
Well, whatever inning. The guy had eight RBIs last night. He killed the Blue Jays in his career. And I'm not even familiar with the guys batting behind him. I think that they were saying on the broadcast he had a good AAA season. But come on, you know, let the same guy kill you over and over again. I just don't understand that. And
I'm not with you. I'm not going to intentionally walk a guy in a one-run game in the bottom of the fifth inning. I think that's a little bit of overkill.
Okay. Well, if you want to be on Farrell's corner on that one, the Zupchinski thing, I feel sorry for Farrell with the bullpen that he's been handed, but I would think after walking a guy to lead off the inning, that should be the end of the rope right then and there. I don't understand sticking with him. And, you know, obviously, I think one of the problems that I have with just picking a guy for your manager that is a pitching coach by nature is that they're just too forgiving to the pitchers. They're always thinking about the pitcher's psyche, and I want to give them some confidence. I kind of like a manager like a Jim Leyland type guy, a cranky old guy that just looks at, give me the next guy.
You know, yeah, but you know what? I don't think that Jim Leyland bringing in a lefty to face two lefties to start an inning is going to yank him after he walks the first one. Although it was a pinch hitter. But and there's something that maybe you can pick on Farrell for not anticipating or at least being willing to gamble more on Zepchinski Napoli than on Roush Davis, because you knew that if you brought the lefty in, they were going to counter and pinch hit with Napoli, who just destroys lefties. I would have shied away from that, maybe. But yanking him after the walk when there's still another lefty that he's supposed to get out, I'm happy with Zep in that situation.
Well, I think after blocking a leadoff man, I'm not sure he deserves the loyalty, but I think the problem
it's
there is...
It's not about loyalty. It's about his job is to get left-handed hitters out, and there was a left-handed hitter coming up, and he's supposed to get him out.
No, he just proved that he wasn't getting left-handers out.
Well, he didn't.
Letting the guy walk.
But that was Mike Napoli. That's not a left-handed hitter.
And I think that's interesting, too, before I go, and a bit of karma is that it's Mike Napoli that got it all started off. And who did Jays get in return for him? Oh, Francisco, right? You know, we can't even put him into the game. He's supposed to be the closer in the night. So kind of funny how that trade came around just in a sort of a small way to bite the Blue Jays again tonight.
Okay.
I hated that move. Hated Francisco before he came. I thought it was a bad move. And there it is again. I mean, he's not even in the game. And I can't help but think about it. I say, well, there's the guy we gave away to get Francisco, and he's just basically taking up a seat in the bullpen because they can't even put him in. He's so bad.
Congratulations.
And, you know. Yeah, hooray. Yeah.
You got anything else?
No.
Anything else you're upset with John Farrell about?
No, just needed to vent that off my chest and whatever. They're 500. Hopefully they can get after a Gondo tomorrow because you wouldn't expect them to, but that's kind of the way the Jays go.
Okay. Thank you for the call. Yeah, it's interesting. John Farrell doesn't get taken to task a lot on this show. But the two things you bring up, I can't agree with either one. Now, maybe knowing that you've got the two lefties and that if you bring in the lefty, they're going to go to Napoli, who's the big threat. Though Zepchinski was ahead of Napoli 0-2, let's not forget, before he walked him. Maybe the move is to go to Casey Jansen, who has been really, really good against left-handed hitters this year. And you're not going to bring in the righty to pinch hit against Jansen. Maybe that's the move. But then again, the last time Casey Jansen pitched, he didn't get anybody out. He gave up a grand slam to the first guy he faced, then a couple of singles before he got chased. So it really has been tough to figure out. I liked the move to bring Zepchinski in. To not go, okay, John Roush is my closer, so he's pitching no matter what, because he hasn't earned that. None of them have earned it. But bottom line, Zepchinski's got to make a better play on that bunt, A, and two, every major league right fielder should catch the ball that Michael Young hit. Rob is in London. Hey, Rob.
Yeah, well, I'm normally in Aurora, but we're at a ball tournament this weekend.
Oh,
you know what? I normally don't criticize Farrell because I like him and the way he handles things generally, but I thought the more obvious mistake was one out. Elvis Andrus comes to the plate. First base is open. Runners at second and third. The winning run's at second. Why aren't you putting him on to give yourself a forced play at all the bases? Why are we pitching to him?
Because Josh Hamilton is up next. You're going to load the bases for Josh Hamilton?
But the run is meaningless at first base, and you've got one out, not two out, one out.
Right.
So give yourself a double play somewhere in the infield, or a fourth place somewhere where you can make a play, get that second out at the plate, whatever it is.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Let's say it was the Blue Jays in that situation, all right? And it's the bottom of the ninth, and the Jays are down by one, and they have runners at second and third and one out. And Eric Thames is up, and Jose Bautista's on deck. Are you going to walk the bases loaded for Jose Bautista?
Well, I'm going to play the percentages. And
the percentages are not to pitch to the best guy on the team.
Well, I think, but the percentages which you added up against what happens in the game, what could happen in the game, you got to give yourself a chance to win the game. And they know that Texas manager has a tendency to use the squeeze.
Not with Josh Hamilton. Not with Josh. You're not.
Not Josh Hamilton coming up to squeeze. Elvis Andrus squeezing him.
Okay, so you avoid the squeeze, but you put a runner on for last year's MVP and the guy who's by far the best hitter on the team.
But I got to get a double play to get out of this game. And that run at first.
No, you don't. You don't. When you have a runners at second and third, you got to get a strikeout. You got to get a pop up. You have to get. There are lots of ways to get out of this game without getting someone to hit into a double play. And if you give up one run, you don't lose. They didn't lose when Andrew squeezed that run in.
No, but I give my defense a lot more options with putting that runner on.
Yes, and you also give their offense a much, much better chance. If it's somebody else, I'm with you. Hamilton, I'm not loading the bases for Josh
Hamilton.
Well,
the thing is, Mike, let's say you get Elvis Andrus out. You get an out somewhere.
Uh-huh.
You still got to face him.
You can walk him. If you have a base open like they did after the squeeze, you walk him.
I still like giving my defense a chance there. I just thought it was crazy, especially knowing that manager has used the squeeze before.
Okay.
I just couldn't believe it. I mean, watching the stream going, why aren't they not walking him? They got first base open, give themselves a chance to still win this game.
They're not walking him because one of the best hitters in baseball was the guy who's on deck. That's why. That's why they didn't walk him. It would have been folly. Guy in Toronto.
Mike.
Guy.
I have to agree with a few comments that the first caller was talking about John Farrell. That's actually the reason why I called in.
The fifth inning, not intentionally walking Nelson Cruz?
No, not that. Okay. I mean, it's the fifth inning, but more the first batter gets on, first pitch, they send him on Escobar to steal second. I mean, how many times has he done that where you almost know if Davis or Escobar get on first pitch, they're running and they're getting thrown out?
Yeah, I think Escobar's probably tried to steal like five bases this year.
Yeah, and you know, it's the first inning. That's the toughest inning on a starting pitcher usually. You know, instead of making them work, you know, we're helping these guys out by, you know, getting runners thrown out. But not only that, it's just his mismanagement of his bullpen, his mismanagement of his bench, and, you know, ultimately just his whole gameplay. I mean, what is John Farrell baseball? I don't know what it is. And Ron Washington, to me, is a very average manager managing a great ball club. And he made John Farrell look minor league in this game.
Point out all these mistakes for me.
Pardon me?
Point out all these mistakes for me, all this mismanagement of the bullpen and the mismanagement of the bench.
And well, let's bring in Corey Patterson. How many times has Corey Patterson dropped a ball like as a replacement? Or how about the time he didn't replace Rivera with someone? Or how about the time he brings in, you know, McCoy?
Wait a minute now. You cannot rip him for bringing Corey Patterson in defensively and then rip him for not bringing Corey Patterson in defensively for Juan Rivera.
But it just seems like every single move that he does, I mean, I would take Patterson over Rivera, but I wouldn't put Patterson in over Thames.
I mean, would.
You know, Thames is up and coming.
Thames is not a good defensive outfielder. Thames is an adequate outfielder at best.
Well, how can you say that based on how many games?
Because I've watched him play. He is not a great outfielder. Patterson is a better defensive outfielder than him. Okay. But he, and I don't know how you could paint it as John Farrell's fault that Corey Patterson didn't make that catch.
Why put him into the game?
Because he's a better defensive outfielder.
And you just said he hasn't shown it all season, so why bring him in?
Because he's still better than Eric Thames.
Well, and then you can go ahead, and I totally agree with the one thing that you were saying is, you know, why bring in Zubchensky? You know you're going to face Napoli. They're hitting 350 righties off of Zubchensky. I'd rather have Rauch come in. You know, and if you're going to go player for player, then you bring Zubchensky in to face Moreland.
Then what do you do?
And then you could come in with Camp. I mean, the whole point was he brought in Dotel. He got one out. He could have stretched Dotel one more inning, and he could have had Fraser come in the last two innings. I mean, there's just a lot of...
I was stunned that he got two innings out of Fraser as it was, and those were pretty terrific. I don't know that you... I mean, it wouldn't have been horrible to bring Dotel back for the seventh. If he gets Andrus, you take your chance with him against Josh Hamilton because you got two righties coming back. That's not unfair.
Let me ask you a question, Mike.
Yeah.
How many games do you think John Farrell's won on his managerial skills, and how many do you think he's lost? And please don't say none and none, because we know that a manager does play a part into this game.
Yeah, I can't think of a game that – I can think of one that he won. I can't think of more than that, and I can't think of any that he lost.
You can't think of any that he's lost?
No.
Wow.
I think the players lose the games. I think that you can make a wrong selection, but a lot of the stuff that people have been – all over John Farrell about. Like the last time they were in Texas and Dotel gave up that home run to Mitch Moreland and they lost that game. I didn't think that was necessarily as bad a move as everybody thought that it was.
I don't blame him every time a bullpen guy blows the game. It's just the way it happens. And, you know, him putting in Rivera all those games at the number 5 hole or the number 4 hole behind their best hitter.
What were the choices?
Well, Rivera? I mean, come on.
What were the choices? Hill wasn't hitting. Encarnacion wasn't hitting.
100 games it took him to figure out JoJo Reyes was not a major league pitcher.
That's not John Farrell.
Well, thank God these two guys are done. And, you know, hopefully, you know, addition by subtraction. And I think what we got in Thames and what we'll have in Lurie will be a lot better off. But thanks for taking the call.
All right. Thanks. I understand the frustration. The frustration tonight should be pointed at Mark Zepchinski and Corey Patterson, not John Farrell. Kirk in Toronto.
Hi, Mike. There's two questions I want to ask. One involves Zepchinski and the delusion of an ERA being a usable statistic in some cases. It seems to me, you've got the stats there, but it seems to me that every time Zepchinski comes in this year, he is giving up somebody's runs, he's walking someone, he's giving up a key hit, and yet he's got this sterling ERA. So the first thing is that reflective of what he's really doing? And the second thing is, can you explain what the dynamic is between relievers on a team and starters and how fragile their relationship may or may not be? Do they sort of belong to two different clubs who view each other with suspicion? You know, what's it really like on the team?
No. Why would you think that?
Well, because, you know, the starters, time after time, I mean, the relievers either save them or, like this, come in, and suddenly a really solid effort just gets thrown away. And I don't mean that, you know, they're going to have two separate camps that never speak to each other, but I just wonder whether they really are, you know, whether they're two groups apart in the clubhouse, when they're on the planes, you know, what's that dynamic like in reality day to day?
I don't travel with them, so I don't know what they do on the plane. In the clubhouse, in the dugout, the bullpen, the relievers hang out together. The starters hang out together, which is only natural because the relievers are always hanging out with each other in the bullpen during games. And the starters are always in the dugout. So That's not strange to me. They don't walk around and, you know, look at each other with suspicion and say, you guys are screwing us, and, you know, and vice versa. Why can't you hold the lead? Well, why can't you give us a bigger lead and stuff like that? That doesn't happen at all. There's nothing going on like that.
Is there sort of a sense of pragmatic realism, like if somebody loses a really well-pitched eight-inning game to a reliever, that there's sort of a sense of forgiveness afterward, or, you know, are there hard feelings for a couple of days?
No, they're all professionals. They all understand that everyone's trying their best. There's no one who's going out there looking to screw somebody over and saying, you know what, I got it in for this guy tonight. I think I'm going to blow a save for him. That's, you know, and I'm sure you understand that that's not the way it works.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I mean, I guess I'm confused as to what, you know, what you think is going on. Do you think these guys all like secretly hate each other or something?
No, not at all. I guess it's really based in human nature, you know, in any workplace. If somebody causes somebody else to look bad, you know, to look bad in front of the boss, to look bad in front of your colleagues, it can have an effect, right? A subtle effect or maybe a very real one. And I've always been curious about how that dynamic plays out on a team, and I'm not there to see it. So,
yeah, that kind of stuff we would never see anyway. As far as Zepchinski is concerned, which was your original question, he has had 19 inherited runners, and five of them have scored. So that's not bad at all.
Right.
He's been, you know, like human nature is wont to do. subject to confirmation bias.
Yeah.
Mark Zepchinski has been a very, 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 very good relief pitcher for the Blue Jays this year.
Right.
He has had a few outings where he has not been good. He had that game in Seattle where he walked everybody he faced at three in a row and was awful. He has had far more efficient and strong outings than otherwise.
Yeah.
And in fact, there have only been three appearances this season out of the whole whack that he's made. There have only been three appearances this year in which he has allowed an inherited runner to score.
Huh. It's fascinating. You're right. It's confirmation bias. Yeah. One or two episodes, and that's all you remember.
Right. There have been 40 appearances in which he has not allowed an inherited runner to score and three in which he has.
Fascinating.
So there you go.
Thank you very much for the answers. I've wanted to know about both those.
All right. Appreciate the call. Thank you. Gregor Chisholm of MLB.com just tweeted that Corey Patterson was asked, in your opinion, was that a catchable ball? And Patterson's answer was no. I got to think, though, every other big league outfielder, with the possible exception of Juan Rivera, the answer is yes. Corey Patterson is supposed to be one of the top defensive outfielders in the game. And he hasn't been close to that in his tenure here in Toronto. Kevin in Toronto, you're next on the Jays Talk.
Hi, Mike. How you doing? It's Kevin, the bartender here. And just wanted to remind you that you're in our pool down at the bar. You picked the Jays at 81 and 81.
What?
And you're hanging right in there. The prize is a beer.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, but way back in April, I think I might have been one of the first callers on Jay's Talk. It was in spring training.
Uh-huh.
And I mentioned that we have a pool at the bar I work at, and you just pick how many wins.
Uh-huh.
And I think I had you penciled in at 81.
Don't know why you did that. I have made no prediction on the number of wins that the Blue Jays would have this year. But
Mike, it's a beer. The prize is a beer.
That's great.
Yeah. It's a whole beer. Anyway, I'm going
to
mention that.
I'll give it to Joel McFadden.
I don't get too twisted out of shape when the Jays lose a game like today because this is not a championship team. This is possibly a 500 team. And whenever I try to think of what a championship team looks like, I just AB this team with, say, the 92 or 93 Jays. And looking at this team right now, there's four or five guys that would maybe be able to be on the 92 or 93 Jays.
Why would you compare them to that team, though?
Because that is the only time I've ever seen a World Series team in action.
Right, and this is not a World Series team.
No, they're not, exactly. So my point is this. They're not going to be much more than a 500 team. There's a lot of players coming through the pipes. There's a couple maybe free agent acquisitions and trades, et cetera,
uh-huh.
that will take this team from where they are right now, which is like about a 1982 or 83 Jays, you know, team.
All the blown saves certainly do remind one of 1983, that's for sure.
What's that?
All the blown saves certainly remind one
absolutely.
Of 1983.
Absolutely. And if you recall, I think in 83 at the All-Star break, they're in first place.
They were.
Right up there with the Expos, and it was like, wow. But we see what it takes.
And Dave Steeb and Andre Dawson were on the cover of Sports
that's
Illustrated.
That's right. Remember it? Yeah, remember it well. Yeah. But that's my point. Like, when I'm standing around the bar, I say to my friends, like, don't sweat the fact that this isn't a championship team because we are waiting for the guys that are coming through the system, and we're waiting to put the rest of the puzzle together. But like I said, this is maybe a 500 team.
Yeah, and it's not so, you know what? And there were a lot of people who didn't even think it was going to be a 500 team this year. But it is. And that's all it is. And you're right. A lot of stuff on the way. But there was never a reason to believe that this was going to be a team that could compete for a championship. And to expect that is just, I mean, you're just asking for hurt. Andrew in Toronto.
I just want to actually, the caller before basically saying what I wanted to say too. It reminds me very much of 1983. And I think that turned out okay for Blue Jay fans in the long run. You know, it's a bit where it's a process. And I would have pegged this as a 500 team at the beginning of the year. I've been out to a lot of games. It's a fun team to watch. You know, it's not, everyone I think should just, you know, kick back and enjoy a little baseball. This is a fun team. So just wanted to say that. And also, you know, even though I do not want and do not advocate Vernon Wells coming back in any way, shape, or form, I hope the defense this year of Corey Patterson and Rajay Davis caused people to kind of reflect and think what a great defensive center fielder he was for a number of years. There's been a lot of balls this year where you can tell when it's over the head of Rajay or Corey, they seem to not take the right path of the ball. Vernon always took the right path of the ball, and you know what? You know, it was time for him to move on, but he was a really good player here, and I know he took a lot of heat over the last few years, but you know, when a ball went out center field, more time than not, he was going to take the right path, and he was going to get it if it was possible to get to that ball. So,
yeah, the first few years of his career, absolutely. Absolutely. The last few, not so much, but you're right. And we've had a lot of great center fielders here, and right now we do not have a great center fielder here. And it shows. I don't think Rajay's that much worse than Vernon was the last few years. And I think Travis Snyder could wind up being a solid center fielder. But, yeah, sometimes it does show up. Richard in Richmond Hill.
Mike, this might be the worst Jays talk ever. I don't know what these people are watching. I think Thames is not an adequate outfielder. He's a terrible outfielder.
He's not a terrible outfielder.
Well, I just don't think he has very good roots to the ball. And anyways, I don't really want to debate that. I'm basically calling just because of the report I heard. It's ESPN reporter. I think it was Ken Rosenthal.
He's a Fox Sports reporter, but yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. Fox Sports reporter. Okay. He mentioned that the Jays had some interest in Heath Bell.
Yep.
And I mean, if San Diego holds on to him, I guess he'd be a type A, I believe.
That's about right, yes.
So if the Jays were to go after him, obviously they'd have to give up something significant. And I remember I called you way back saying how, and I think we both agreed that acquiring a reliever or signing one to a large free agent contract isn't usually the way to go because they usually fail in the long run.
Yes.
But this guy's about as lights out as they are. He's one of the rare ones.
No, he's not.
You don't think so?
No.
I think.
No,
he's
33. He's not in shape. He was not even a good reliever until he went to San Diego. And that's the best pitcher's park in the majors in the worst division in the majors. So, no, I don't think Heath Bell is one of those.
Okay, so you disagree with me then. I guess there is something to the story, but I guess you'd be against that, obviously.
I would be for trading for Heath Bell if you didn't have to give up the equivalent of what's going to come back when he leaves as a free agent. You know, not a Miguel Olivo type thing where you're only giving up $500,000 to get yourself a sandwich pick. But if you can get Heath Bell for less than too high draft picks worth of value, do it. If you can get him and turn him around for something you like better, do it. You like better than what you gave up, I mean. But I think there will be teams that are in a race that really need a closer that will give up more to the Padres than the Blue Jays will. Thanks for the calls. Sorry to those of you to whom we could not get, but the clock is our enemy tonight. And we will take a look at the scoreboard and put a nice tidy bow on this thing as the Jays Talk continues on the Blue Jays Radio Network. Oh, Blue Jays losing ugly, and we'll try to avoid the brooms of the Texas Rangers tomorrow night as this series concludes. A 5-4, the final score tonight, as a Ranger score 2 in the ninth. Corey Patterson butchers what he refers to after the game as an uncatchable ball. Not sure anybody else really feels that way. This game should probably still be going on. Now, there are a couple of games that are still going on as we check the scoreboard, and it's the Washington Nationals leading the Dodgers 6-5 in the top of the fifth. Giants over the Brewers 4-2, trying to close it out in the ninth. Brian Wilson is on to shut it down. If he does, the Giants will remain 4 games up on Arizona in the West. And the Brewers will move into a first-place tie with the St. Louis Cardinals, a game up on the Pittsburgh Pirates, because St. Louis beat Pittsburgh 9-1 today. In the American League, the Mariners have lost 13 in a row. Boston beat them 3-1. Seattle loaded the bases with nobody out in the eighth and could not score. The Red Sox win. Yankees lose 4-3 to Oakland. So Boston's lead over New York now 3 in the American League East. Tampa Bay lost as well, 5-4 in 10 innings to the Kansas City Royals. And the Angels fell 3-2 to Baltimore, so the Yankees lead in the wild card. Still 5.5. This series and this road trip concludes tomorrow night. We're on at 7:30 Eastern for an 8:05 first pitch. Brett Cecil for the Blue Jays, Alexi Agondo for the Rangers. Those of you listening on our flagship station, Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590, and on fan590.com, get an extra pre-game show at 7 o'clock We'll be talking Hall of Fame. Roberto Alomar and Pat Gillick are going in tomorrow. You've been listening to Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by Rogers, a proud partner of the Toronto Blue Jays. This copyrighted broadcast is presented by authority of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership and may not be reproduced or retransmitted in any form. And the accounts and descriptions of this game may not be disseminated without the express written consent of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership or the Blue Jays Radio Network. For Jerry Howard, Alan Ashby, Tim Crabtree, Tom Young, Dylan Brown, and Joel McFadden, I'm Mike Wilner. Good night from Toronto.